Well, in this live episode of Historically St. Pete, our very own Rui Farias, the executive director of the St. Petersburg Museum of History, is here to talk about jazz history in Tampa Bay. Welcome, Rui.
Welcome. So happy to be here to talk about this amazing subject.
Well, nobody knows more about it than you, so let's hear. I mean, I know about the Manhattan Casino, but there's a history.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, jazz, you know, New Orleans is credited, right, for the birth of modern jazz. And, of course, it moves north with a great migration of African-Americans who went north looking for work. But really, I mean, it was the 1920s that gave birth to the jazz age. And I mean, hundreds of clubs, you know, and dance halls opened throughout the nation, especially in Chicago and New York. And, of course, the most famous of all, you know, the Cotton Club. The passage, you know, of the 19th Amendment gave women the right to vote. It gave them newfound freedoms, including shedding their Victorian age behavior and clothing for the flapper look and the free-spirited attitude of the jazz age. And the one thing the jazz age really, and especially the birth of jazz, doesn't get enough credit for is creating the Harlem Renaissance. And that's really what creates what we have here in Tampa Bay. Of course, Harlem, primarily an African-American neighborhood in New York City, becomes the epicenter of African-American art, music, and, of course, the written word. I mean, people like Langston Hughes and Zora Neale Hurston. And, of course, musicians like Louis Armstrong introduced African-American art to the world. The Cotton Club. I mean, the Cotton Club was famous for its jazz. That building was filled with both white and black audiences who listened and danced to the sounds of Duke Ellington and Billie Holiday and Louis Armstrong, just to name a few. But here in St. Petersburg, the jazz age kicks off in the early 1920s. Actually, it's the St. Pete Coliseum that's built in 1924. It's built as a big band and jazz dance hall, known as the finest dance hall in the South. It opens on the same day in November that George Gandy opens the Gandy Bridge connecting St. Pete and Tampa. And I'm sure there was something connected with that to make sure that the people could get here from Tampa to get to the Coliseum. And if you look at the Coliseum, before you know it, I mean, there are artists like Ray Charles and Cab Calloway and Duke Ellington and James Brown and Ella Fitzgerald and Dizzy Gillespie. It just keeps going and going and going, right? That packed a building that was known as the Palace of Pleasure. But ironically, those jazz musicians, as they performed further south, black jazz lovers weren't permitted to attend the concerts and dances in the whites-only venues where Jim Crow was king. And this is where he takes us to the Manhattan Casino. The Cotton Club in New York becomes the jumping-off point for a thing called the Chitlin' Circuit, right? It's a series of venues from New York to Florida where black audiences could listen to these Harlem Renaissance greats, these jazz and big band greats.
You know, what's amazing is that this is June, is Black Music Month.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are on our Jazzapalooza fundraiser at Radio St. Pete, and we're talking about the incredible black musicians who came through town. James Brown, Ella Fitzgerald, Louis Armstrong, Ray Charles, Nat King Cole, B.B. King, Little Richard, Otis Redding, Fats Waller, Count Basie, Duke Ellington, Lionel Hampton, Cab Calloway, Sarah Vaughan, Fats Domino, The Ink Spots, and so many more. The Manhattan Casino unfortunately closed. So that was just in its heyday. And then didn't they at one point in the Deuces try to relaunch it a couple years ago?
They did. And, you know, when you look at the Manhattan, it has a long storied history. I mean, you know, I talked a second ago about the, you know, the Chitlin' Circuit that starts in New York, makes its way down into the South. These venues were gathering places for black communities, providing opportunities for celebration and finding solace in music. Tampa, for instance, Tampa had its famed Central Avenue and Joiner's Cotton Club. It was a major, you know, Chitlin' Circuit stop. But really, none was more famous than the Manhattan Casino itself, located on 22nd Street in South St. Petersburg. And it was actually famed African-American developer Elder Jordan Sr. who builds and opens the Jordan Dance Hall in the heart of St. Pete's black community. And the building opens, or the actual dance hall opens in 1925. It was eventually sold and renamed the Manhattan Casino, and it became known as like that area and tied in with Tampa as far as jazz as the Harlem of the South for generations of African Americans here in St. Petersburg. I mean, you mentioned some of those amazing names, right? And you mentioned, you know, even B.B. King. We have this really cool photo at the museum of a very skinny, very young B.B. King on stage at the Manhattan. I mean, after in all these bands, and to me, probably the most amazing thing is all these artists would show up at the Coliseum and they would play, right? And then when they were finished, they'd load into their cars and their trucks and their vans or whatever, and they'd make their way south to the Manhattan. So after playing for those white audiences at the Coliseum, these jazz greats like B.B. King would head to the Manhattan Casino and perform for the African-American community there. And I think it became like our jazz mecca here in St. Petersburg, right? And it also opened the door to so many St. Petersburg musicians. So many local jazz greats like Buster Cooper, right, would back up these artists on this tiny stage in this non-air-conditioned room, right? And I've heard stories and I've talked to people. And, you know, unfortunately, when I was old enough to actually go to some of these things, the Manhattan was already closed. But I've, you know, talked to people who attended some of these concerts and these dances, and they would say that, you know, there was always a push to get to the outdoor balconies to cool off because it was so hot in there, but they didn't stop the place from just being packed with all these people.
You know, I didn't know that the George Cooper Orchestra, which was the house band of the Manhattan Casino in 1945, was led by Buster Cooper's cousin George.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that was him. But he later had his own jazz place, didn't he, Buster Cooper?
Well, you know, if you remember, and a lot of people may, before Central Avenue, especially the Janus Block, became what it is now, walking down Central Avenue, and as you were walking down closer to, you know, to the Detroit Hotel, you would hear the unforgettable, amazing trombone of Buster Cooper, where he would be performing every weekend there in the open air area at the Garden Restaurant. So that was the spot where you knew you could find him. I mean, we were very fortunate that Buster Cooper's family allowed us to borrow his trombone, actually, for an exhibit that we had on the 1920s jazz age at the museum. And it was just, you know, it felt like, you know, you're holding this you know, piece of history that's just amazing here in St. Petersburg. And like I said, it did give an opportunity for a lot of these local jazz artists to back up these major acts, and some of the acts would actually take them on the road with them after they were done. So it opened a lot of doors.
Sounds like a good fundraiser, the 1920s Jazz Club at the St. Petersburg Museum of History.
I'm wondering why the city – I you know, so the Manhattan is closed, right? It's the city
1968,
owned,
right?
Originally, correct.
Right.
It's reopened a few times since then, been remodeled. The city now owns it, and it is still an amazing building with so much history. And what a perfect place to open a jazz club today.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
You know, I can't believe that Louis Armstrong, I mean, you know, Louis Armstrong, he made his bones playing the Chitlin Circuit, right?
Most of them did, yeah.
And then he played, you know, he brought his band to the Manhattan Casino, and it was 6,000 square feet of dancing, and boy, did they dance.
And the chairs, you know, we've got these amazing photos, and it shows like the chairs that just lined the walls because they had to create as much dance floor space as they could. And really, I mean, and if you're a music fan, if you're a jazz fan, and you know, some of these names that we've rattled off of just, you know, these are the best that there ever was, right? And you look at some of these photographs, and I actually have a photograph of the George Cooper band backing up this artist, and I'm looking at this artist, and I'm like, who is this? And, you know, you see that it's Little Richard, who was, you know, probably, I would amaze, I probably assume in his late teens, early 20s or something at the time. So when you think of some of these names that James Brown performed there. You know,
James Brown?
Yes. So,
whoa.
You know, the king of soul, you know, so the hardest working man in show business, right? So, you know, when you think about these names that performed, you know, just not at the major venues like the Coliseum, but, and I'm not saying the Manhattan wasn't a major venue, but you wouldn't, you drive by it now and you look at the building and think, it's not a very big building. How did they get all those people in there, right? And I'm sure it was just fantastic.
Well, I know that you and Bill DeYoung collaborated on for Vintage St. Pete. And I did not know that Gibbs High School, and I'm quoting from Bill's article, they didn't have an auditorium or meeting space until the mid-40s. They had their proms there, their sock hops, and the graduation ceremonies. The church socials were there.
Absolutely.
It was really the heart of the community, wasn't it?
It was. It really was. And I did hear a story once, an interview when back in the 1920s, I guess, when Elder Jordan Sr. was looking at building the building. And the question was going out, what does the community really need? And, of course, all the young people stood up and said, we need a place to dance. Right, we need a place to meet and have music and dancing and have fun, and that's, you know, that's what he built.
Incredible, Rui. jazz has really come alive in this town.
It has. It has.
And you had Elder Jordan's son in to talk about his book.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that.
So he, Elder Jordan's family, longtime St. Pete residents, still St. Pete residents, and you know, they've just got this storied history. And Basha Jordan Jr. actually wrote a tell-all book about Elder Sr. And how he understood it from his family's and his, you know, his growing up with Elder Jordan. And it's pretty amazing when you read it to visualize in an era, and it's hard for us today to think about how segregated and how racist the city was at one time. You know, when you think about, you know, African Americans not being able to purchase homes north of Central Avenue, or not being able to sit on the green benches, or not be able to shop right on the shops on Central Avenue. You know, you think about that now and it's almost, you know, impossible. You probably think we're thinking about the 1800s when we're not. We're talking about the 1950s, right? This book, you know, when you read about Elder Jordan and try and understand this man who lived, grew up in that era, had to deal with that, and came an ultra successful businessman. It's just fantastic.
Was this even in the 60s? So I'm looking at 1962 from Vintage St. Pete, Bill's thing. B.B. King was there. The Count Basie Orchestra was there. So are we talking 61, 62, the 60s, that this was still, you know, so?
Oh, actually, I mean, it was and very active structure. Two things happened that hurt the Manhattan Casino and also hurt the 22nd Street corridor of the African-American businesses. And the street that the Manhattan Casino sits on, you have to understand, again, was the heart and soul of the African-American community at this time. And, I mean, there was everything from, you know, if you wanted a dress, a pair of shoes, barbecue, a haircut, doctor, movie theater, whatever you wanted, it was on 22nd Street. For the African American community. And, you know, so two things happened. The city becomes integrated. So now you have an entire population of our city that at one time was unable or not allowed to go down to Central Avenue and go to Moss Brothers or, you know, shop at, you know, Rutland's or any of these stores that were downtown. And now they can. So they did. And, of course, you team that up with the interstate. And when the interstate came through and basically cut straight through the middle of that community, it split the community in half. So those two things became the early downfall of 22nd Street and, of course, the Manhattan Casino.
Folks, if you've just tuned in, we're talking with the eloquent Rui Farias, the executive director. That's my story. I'm sticking to it.
Never been called that before.
St. Petersburg Museum of History is having an incredible event tonight. Rui, you want to just a few tickets left for your event tonight?
Sure. We have an event every month called Happy Hour with a Historian, and we bring in these fun historians who talk about just ridiculous things of Florida and St. Pete history. And actually, the folks coming in today, Jeff Davies, has an amazing – he started off as just his own little Facebook group thing. He wanted to start about a history of Florida and pictures, and it's grown to like 500,000 followers, and you know, I geek out about it and follow it all the time. So now he's taking it on the road. So he does a, you know, an hour presentation of the history of Florida in photographs, and it's pretty amazing. I every time he posts photos, I'm like, oh my gosh, I didn't know this existed, you know, in different parts of the state. So it runs from 6 o'clock to the doors are at 6. Program starts at 6:30.
So folks, our concert is sold out tonight with Nate Najjar and Daniela Soledade. And while we encourage you to listen on Radio St. Pete, we also encourage you to go over to the St. Petersburg Museum of History and enjoy this incredible exhibit. You know, it is African American Music Appreciation Month. It's June, and it's just wonderful that we're doing our jazz fundraiser today. That was created by President Jimmy Carter in 1979, and it's a month to celebrate the African American musical influences that comprise an essential part of our nation's treasured cultural heritage. Who knew that Tampa, the Chitlin Circuit legacy, was right here? Rui.
Right here.
Rui, parting words for our listeners and a shout out for Radio St. Pete on our special day.
Absolutely. If you are not a member of Radio St. Pete, shame on you. So go online and click that button and become a member today. Radio St. Pete is definitely one of our treasures here in our city, and we all need to support it.
I want you all to tune in on Mondays during our lunchtime conversations for the prodigious historian.
Oh, my gosh. I love this room. Yeah.
Listen, we'll send you our PR for you later. The prodigious Rui Farias, who is in St. Pete Rising. He's in St. Pete Life magazine. And luckily for us, thank you, Rui, for being historically St. Pete every Monday during lunchtime conversations.
My pleasure. This is my favorite time of the day.
We're going to hear a Tampa Bay Times. Thank you to our Tampa Bay Times for allowing us to use the sounds of the Manhattan Casino.
Well, I grew up at 720 21st Street South, which is one block from 7th Avenue and 22nd Street, where the Manhattan Casino was and is located.
And from that distance, I could hear all music, whether it's jazz, rock and roll, blues.
All of the visiting musicians would arrive during the day at Sidney Harden Service Station, which was right on the corner of 22nd Street and 7th Avenue, and park their buses there.
I would notice that they would wear their tuxedo pants, their white long-sleeve shirts, and a tie would be clipped to their collar of the shirt. Their tuxedo jacket would be over their arms.
When you went up those narrow steps to the Manhattan, and once you were inside, you were just transformed because it was so exciting. That was just dancing the entire time.
It was just a big open hall and had wooden benches on the side where you sit at, and a bandstand that was maybe about 7 feet off the floor, if that high.
I guess I was about in 11th grade, and I asked my mom if I could go to Manhattan Casino. She never would let me go, but I kept insisting, well, not really insisting, but asking. So one night, she decided to let me go with my cousin.
It's historic, because at that time, it was the only place we had as blacks to go have a good time and be with our friends.
It was the only place we had really to go out and have fun and really socialize. There weren't many so-called clubs.
All the civic clubs. After the 19th, then what would be the next? Clubs and women's clubs had their affairs there. The Gibbs High School prom and sweetheart balls. And all that was all held at the Manhattan Casino. It was all we had.
It was a giant in his own standing. Believe me, it's a thing that it's impossible, you know, to forget. Believe me.
Special thanks from the Tampa Bay Times to the Carter G. Woodson African American Museum for arranging the interviews you just heard about the Manhattan Casino.